Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
And this is Abe Thompson here at the SecureSat Studios in Colorado Springs on the New Cyber Frontier. Today we have the distinct privilege of having with us Dr. Pawan Jain at the University of Wyoming. And that's double doctor. Among a number of other titles, but it's a pleasure to have you here, Professor Jain.
Thanks. It's great to be on this show.
Excellent. So, talk to me about kind of your journey professionally and kind of how you've arrived at some of the passions and things that really keep you awake at night.
Well, I'll start off from my if you don't mind, I'll go back all the way to my childhood where. I grew up in India and in a very small town, and there were not many ways to get out of the town and get some education.
Sure.
So I used to travel quite a distance to learn about technology.
Wow.
And I was always interested in that area. Interestingly, growing up, I don't think we ever experienced more than 6 hours of power supply. So,
wow.
So there will be like about 18 hours of power failure every single day.
Wow.
But that made us more efficient. I don't think
sure.
I ever realized any drawbacks of having like, any limitations that I experienced using because of the power failure. Because just I would just organize my work around those 6 hours.
Sure.
But then that kept me thinking, like, well, there should be a better way to teach these things to remote areas.
Sure.
I was looking for programs to get a PhD, and I thought maybe education technology something that might be interesting and useful for India as a whole.
Yeah.
And so that's why I got to Wyoming and I got my PhD in instructional design and technology, and I took some of the information back, and I was able to implement in some of the business schools where they started offering some of the online programs. So I helped some of them to build high quality, very interactive online courses.
Excellent.
And then in the meantime, I was also interested in finance. So I got a second PhD because when I graduated my first one, the market was so hot. Every college was moving towards the online offering of courses. Like that was
course.
In 2008. And so my professor from Wyoming, he moved to Memphis.
Mm-hmm.
And Memphis is known for like stock market research.
Right, right.
So basically, he gave me this kind of option, like, well, you work for me, and in the meantime, you can get your PhD if you want. And so I took the opportunity, and I'm glad I did. Then I got interested in the other side of technologies, implementation of technology in trading. So I did some work in understanding how high-frequency trading, which is basically trading through computers
right.
without any human intervention, that is impacting the entire stock market. And so I presented some of my work at the SECs across the world, stock exchanges,
sure.
They were implementing it. Because when I got into this area, everyone was really bullish,
of course.
Positive
yeah,
about
yeah.
high-frequency trading. And my research was on the negative side,
yeah.
like some of the limitations and some of the problems that I noticed propped up due to this new form of trading.
Would you characterize that most people were pretty dramatically surprised at how much reliance there was on the sort of the automated trading?
Yeah, yeah. I think, in fact, the places I presented, some of the people would just be of the same mindset, like, well, how does it matter? so I had to explain them,
sure.
like, well, it's not like historically, the good analogy would be the horse carriages. People used to ride these horse carriages, and the chances of accident was very slim.
Hmm.
But now when you introduce the cars in the system and without any traffic controls, then you can think how messed up the system might be because of the speed of the highways and so forth. The accident might lead to big human losses.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's why we have these speed limits and we have some traffic rules. But if you take that to the trading environment without any regulation, then it's a super fast highway with no speed limits, it definitely is going to cause some accidents.
The Wild West.
Yeah, exactly. So we have noticed, and in my paper I highlight some of those events like flash crash, and where the market crashed 10% right away in half an hour, and within the next half hour it recovers back. It's just mind-boggling to see, and that unfortunately is a new normal with the new form of traders that have been introduced in the marketplace. So that was my story.
Excellent.
About how I came. And
excellent. Let's take a quick break and we'll hear from our sponsor.
Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
And this is Abe Thompson here in the SecureSet studios here in Colorado Springs on the new Cyber Frontier. Our guest is Dr. Pawan Jain. And you were just kind of highlighting the stunning potential ramifications of overemphasis or over-reliance on automated systems in the trading environment. And what we've known historically, though, is that the finance industry has kind of led the way in regulations and compliance. Are they starting to catch up, or are people just kind of turning a blind eye to maybe the risks of having such reliance right now?
I think you're right on, like on the technology aspect. I would say that they have always been on the front end of any innovation. They were, I think the automation started in 2000 in New York Stock Exchange, when there was entire trading was done on computers. There was no middlemen.
True.
So forth. So they're always on this leading edge, but it was mostly driven by practitioners,
right?
Not the regulators. Regulators always play this catch-up game. Like, well, now the things have happened. Now we have to fix this.
Sad.
That has been my problem with my visits to these different places. When I propose any kind of potential regulation, I always feel like there's a strong push against regulation. Which again, I'm not a proponent of regulation in any way.
Sure.
But there are things, as I said, like when the cars are driving at ultra high speed, and if you don't have a speed limit, sometimes that can lead to big crashes and human life might be lost and so forth.
Sure.
The same thing happens in the trading environment. If we don't have these checks and balances, we don't have these kill switches, we don't have this kind of circuit breakers. Think about the negative side of the economy. When the market downturn happens, these traders are there just to make money. They're not there to protect the market from failing or anything like that. If they can't make money, they just pull instantly out of the market. And when they pull that liquidity that's being supplied, which is more than 50% today, so 50% of the trading is done by these hedge fund traders. If they come outside, all of them disappears from the market instantly, that would be a big sort of crash in the
catastrophic
market, falling off the cliff, rather than a step-by-step process where you have an opportunity to get out of the market.
So
I think that's where I sort of push for some regulation. Like, we need to maybe take a step back and slow down and maybe think about the social welfare.
Yeah.
What's the point? How is it contributing towards social welfare? Like, trading at nanosecond, 1/1,000,000th of a second. How is it impacting the overall valuations for a guy who's holding a retirement portfolio, right?
Yeah.
And if the market crashed like that, that it becomes so volatile, it becomes so risky, then all of those portfolios that are in the pension funds, that are held by pension funds, they might be adversely affected, which basically is going to affect the normal human being too. Yeah. We have seen evidence, like in 2008 crisis happened, a lot of people who were trying to retire had to postpone their retirement.
Because
their portfolio values were down to 25%.
Yeah.
And now they don't have enough money for retirement.
At all. And that is profound, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I think there might be a need for regulation to make sure that we are not in the situation where the unsophisticated investors who have no clue about what's happening in the marketplace should not be sort of taken advantage of by these more sophisticated machine trading.
Yeah. For sure. Now, where would some of that responsibility lie that would allow it to be, you know, because you talked about individual traders are obviously very self-interested. Where is there sort of a body that could appropriately execute that regulation without bias? Where would be the sort of place to start?
Right. I think, again, looking at the academic research, mm-hmm. because that would be unbiased sort of. And in fact, incorporating some of that into the rulemaking by SECs across the world. And it has to be a unified. I feel like you cannot be, like, for example, if U.S. come up with regulation, these traders might move to Japan, might move to London, and so forth.
Right.
So unless until, and we have a unified regulation body, like all the SECs are member of this International Securities and Exchange Commission, pretty much. And if they can come up with a unified regulation to curb this, or to at least slow down, we don't want them to lose money either.
Right.
But at the same time, they should do it in the right way.
Sure.
It should not be like, well, there's a race and you have a plane and I have a car, right? I mean, that's not a fair race.
Sure.
So I think that's where I think if the SECs all across the world come up with some kind of unified regulation, it might be able to curb some of these activities.
Now, in terms of how the various SECs are composed, you know, what are some of the criteria that go into who gets onto that body? You know, what would allow for some cross-pollinization among the various SECs, or are they pretty disparate?
They already have it. Okay. They already have it right now. So they, across, like, almost all of the Securities Exchange Commission are part of this IO. I think I'm forgetting the exact name, but it's International Organization for Securities Regulation.
Mm-hmm.
And then what they do is once a year they have a big meeting where all of them meet and try to discuss on some policies.
Okay.
Implementation hurdles. Now, there is obviously this political barrier, like every country is different and they have different sort of motivations.
Sure.
But I think some of these kind of stuff, which is happening across the globe, like high frequency trading is impacting everywhere. Like India is like 91% of trading is done by high frequency traders. Same thing about Japan, London Stock Exchange, and the New York Stock Exchange and NASDAQ. So the trading predominantly by these computers is increasing over the years.
Sure. Sure.
And hence, having a unified regulation may not be as bad.
Now, with your background in educational technology, have you ever gotten to a point where, you know, you've been able to build or propose training for the professionals inside the industry that would solidify the protections around automated trading?
Yeah, I think that would be pretty interesting. I mean, that's an interesting take that you bring up a very good point. Is it something that we can avoid?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Because or manage.
The problem is, so here is the issue. Like again, these traders are driven by profit making.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the initial things that were happening, there's something called dark pools. So dark pool is a place where the trader can go in and trade without disclosing how much they want to trade and without knowing who the counterparty is.
Wow.
So the benefit is like they get a better price because if, let's say, all of a sudden a big investors come out and say, I want to sell 1 million stocks of Microsoft, all of a sudden there's a negative news in the market and the price may fall. And this trader that's trying to sell for any reason, it could be liquidity reason, maybe he has liquidity needs, right? Might not get the best price.
Yeah.
And so they go to the dark pools. Now, what happened was these dark pools started selling this liquidity to these high-frequency traders. Like, well, all right, well, we don't want you to disclose these identities, but you can trade against them. The benefit was these institutional investors who had to sell big amount of volume or trade big volume, they were able to trade it, all right? The downside was these high-frequency traders got undue advantage.
Yeah.
Where they get access, instant access to this huge amount of order flow, where they could generate just maybe 1 cent per stock and still generate millions of dollars.
Yeah, move the market. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So if you think about it, like if the trading happens at a nanosecond speed, then within a second, there's thousands of trades that these guys can do.
Wow.
And all they have to generate is one penny. And if they generate one penny every second, they generate like, if they say $10, then think about the scale throughout the day.
Goodness.
Right?
So, yeah.
And then that is risk-free, which
for them, hurts, right?
Yeah, for them, which hurts the entire goal of the marketplace. The marketplace exists because there's diversity in opinion.
Yeah.
You think the stock is going to go up, I think the stock is going to go down.
Right.
That's why we trade. Mm-hmm. But if we all are on the same side of the market, there's no trading and the market would crash.
Yeah, yeah.
So the idea of SECs is to protect the fairness in the market.
Sure.
And there's no fairness anymore, it seems, so because they get access to these order flow in advance.
And what is basically the technology in place that allows for this rapid technology for those technology junkies out here? What's actually happening?
So what's happening is traditionally there was an advantage for these big banks to buy the buildings right next to the clearinghouse.
Mm-hmm.
So in Manhattan, where the clearinghouse used to be, you see all these big buildings and
right.
so forth. And so they were bought out. So exchanges saw this as an opportunity. Like, well, why don't we allow these traders to be in the exchange? So they introduced something called co-location.
Mm-hmm.
So New York Stock Exchange moved its office to New Jersey and bought a big area right around the clearinghouse. And now within the clearinghouse, they sell the space to a computer. So if you are a trader and you want to be like close to the clearinghouse, you don't need to buy the building anymore. You just take your computer and put it right in the exchange.
Wow.
So that's the speed. So the exchange, this clearinghouse, they have this data feed that comes directly to the computer. The computer runs the algorithm, and then the algorithm gives an indication whether to buy or sell.
Sure.
And instantly it sells to the trading computer, and the trading computer executes these orders.
Wow. And these data links, are they standalone, or is it still a web-based methodology?
It's still cloud-based. Like,
oh,
everything
cloud-based
is on cloud. So,
right, right.
So all of these data feeds are coming from, like, it could be any news, like the company announcing earnings.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
And now, let's say Apple comes out and says, well, we sold a record number of iPhones.
Yeah.
Even it took me a few seconds to say that, right? The computers are going to, like,
instantly.
By the time I told this news to you, they already traded and left the market, right?
Oh, my goodness. Wow, this has a lot of ramifications. Let's take another quick break and go hear from our sponsors.
Security Services are your cybersecurity experts with decades of experience providing professional training services for our clients in various industries. We offer professional training and certification in areas of cybersecurity, safety, health, and environmental services at our academy. Our in-person and online training provides a collaborative environment where students can interact directly with instructors through live chats or in private classrooms. Visit MurraySecurityServices.com for more information.
This is Abe Thompson from the SecureSat Studios here in Colorado Springs on the new Cyber Frontier. Our guest is Dr. Pawan Jain, and you've just kind of highlighted for us this sort of frightening potential of, you know, humans trying to compete with these nanosecond trading computers and all the technology ramifications. So I imagine there's solutions and approaches. You know, we're talking about transactions. One of the big areas in transactions for us in cybersecurity is this technology of blockchain. And you've had an area of interest there. What can you tell us about how blockchain can impact, sort of the American and maybe the world financial practice?
Excellent question. I think the blockchain is a new form of technology that a lot of people are trying to understand a little bit more about what's happening in this environment. And I think it has a great implication for the financial market, especially because if you think about the finance industry, it is purely based on the financial intermediation sector.
Yes.
Like, think about the banks, think about the exchanges. They are all intermediating one thing or the other. Like, exchanges is intermediating the transactions. Buyer is a place where buyers can meet the sellers. The same thing happens in the banks. An investor meets the depositor, pretty much.
Right.
So if I have excess money, I go deposit the money in the bank, and there's someone who needs the money, go to the bank and get that money out of there. So I think this the service that these intermediaries provide is the trust. So I cannot trust the investors directly, or I cannot trust the counterparty. What if the counterparty fails? So that's why I trust these intermediation institutions. But if that trust could be programmed, that's what the underlying concept of blockchain is.
Sure.
Is they're able to program this trust and create a trustless system, pretty much.
Yeah.
So then we don't need these intermediaries. And the intermediaries are taking a big cut. Like if you think about the deposits, like how much interest do we get? About 1% or even less than 1%. And then if you go out and take a loan, you still have to pay 3 or 4% on mortgages. And if you take unsecured loan, then there's no limit.
Right.
You maybe charge 20% or 30% on that unsecured loan. So that spread is earned by these intermediaries.
Yeah.
Right? That's a big number. And so if we can get rid of that, then it's a social welfare. So everyone would be better off, except the banks. Obviously.
Except those guys, yeah.
And then the same thing happens in the trading. So when you want to buy something, you end up paying a little bit higher price. Then when you want to sell, you pay a little bit lower price. And then the spread is being kept by these intermediaries.
So to avoid maybe the tumultuous change that might bring, is it a recommendation of an iterative change, or is it worth the risk of sort of eliminating that middleman pretty rapidly and then trying to find out how to deal with their social welfare?
we are still at the early phase.
Sure.
Still need to understand, like, there are a few benefits of having intermediaries. For example, government is an intermediary.
Yeah.
So if you think about government being an intermediary, they serve this important role. Like, if there's the crisis happens, then the government sort of intervenes and tries to make sure that the prices don't fall like as rapidly as they would without the intermediation.
Right.
So they do provide some of the services. Are we ready for the disintermediation? That's the key. I don't know if we are ready yet,
sure,
because we are so used to this intermediation. For example, let's say in Bitcoin space, there's no intermediary, right?
Let's say
if you forget your password to the system, what do you do? I mean, it's pretty much lost.
Yeah.
We are so much used to calling our banks, like, well, I lost my password. Can you help me out here?
Sorry.
There's always this customer service that they provide, and then we never lose our net worth.
Right.
But in case of disintermediation, we are on our own.
Yeah.
So there's no place to complain.
Interesting.
No place.
Or
so
to get help.
Like,
yeah.
We get all of the cut for that's being kept by intermediaries. We don't have to pay that.
Right. And so who have you seen sort of lead the way, not necessarily by name organizations, but unless you want to, but who's kind of leading the way in the implementation of blockchain in the financial industry?
So like all of the big financial firms. So we were at JP Morgan Chase last week, and they're working on blockchain.
How is Jamie doing?
So they're thinking of in a positive way. They're thinking like, well, can we sort of get rid of some of the cost structure,
right?
And maybe implement blockchain in that environment, and like audit systems,
right?
Maybe it's useful for audit systems. So I've seen companies like IBM, Microsoft. They're all working on some solutions for blockchain. But again, they are not pure. The block concept of blockchain means that it's a pure disintermediate system. There's no one controls that system. It's a decentralized network,
right?
Like a Bitcoin. That is the strength of blockchain.
Right.
But when you think about the other side of the blockchain, there's also something called private blockchains. So basically, there is like Microsoft implementing a block. Like a good example is Facebook trying to come up with this Libra currency, right?
Right.
But that's not the same as Bitcoin, because it's controlled by Facebook and let's say 100 of their other partners.
Right.
So if they want to make any change, they all meet together and say, well, all right, we are going to change the system, and overnight it can be changed. Bitcoin, on the other hand, it cannot be changed that fast.
Right.
Because there are more than like 70,000 nodes, and it needs at least 50% of verification.
Right.
Which is complete disintermediation. Wyoming has been leading the way in terms of regulation.
Huh.
So we have came up with several regulations which are pro-blockchain. We're trying to drag these companies to the state.
Sure.
And we just approved something called SPD Bank. so a special purpose depository institution.
Sure.
So most of the time what happens is, let's say you the institutions, they're not allowed to own any asset class if they cannot sort of have a custodian, which is a third party custodian. And the problem with these cryptocurrencies or crypto assets is, like, the banks are not willing to be a custodian for these crypto assets.
Sure.
And hence, by introducing this bank, we might be able to attract more and more investors to Wyoming who are willing to invest in this crypto crypto world.
Have you followed? Go ahead.
No, I was just about to make one last comment. It's basically the SEC hasn't made their stand clear. Mm. They just said that they are against the securities ICOs, so basically initial coin offerings, mm-hmm. anything that has to do with security that's being controlled by the SEC. But Wyoming went out and said, like, we're not going to do security offerings here in the state. What we are interested in is the utility tokens.
Sure.
So basically providing a service and so forth.
How have you followed much of what Colorado's done with implementing their blockchain legislation here recently in the last couple
of
years?
Yeah.
Are there significant differences? Because it sounds like what you're talking about is kind of limited right now to the financial implications. Or
not
is this a larger?
It has a broader implication.
Okay.
Like, there's a company that started that's called Beefchain in Wyoming, mm-hmm. and they're tracking, like, cows.
Yeah.
And they hope that if we can provide more information about where the beef is coming from, the customers might be willing to pay more.
Excellent.
Now, I don't think so. Wyoming has an advantage because we are such a small state, and our legislators are very excited about this thing. So we were able to approve these legislations very quickly.
Excellent.
I don't think the other states would be as quick.
Right.
Like, there have been talks in Delaware before Wyoming to put the company registrations on blockchain. They never were able to get through it.
Sure.
And we were able to get through it. So now if you want to start a blockchain company in Wyoming, I mean, your registration is going to be on blockchain.
Yeah, my experience in Wyoming tends to be that the legislature is a lot more unified than a lot of other states, for sure.
True.
Yeah.
Yep, exactly.
Excellent.
And so I think Colorado have started working mm-hmm. on it, and most of the states are working off the model of Wyoming, mm-hmm. like what we have implemented.
Sure.
But as I said, like, it would be very difficult to pass those legislations at such a fast pace, quick rate.
Sure.
And other benefit that Wyoming has is no taxation. We don't have any taxation.
Yeah.
And so, and we categorize these crypto assets as intangible assets.
Sure.
So basically, they are taxed as property, but your property is only taxed if it's tangible.
Sure.
So we put them as intangible. So you don't even pay property taxes in Wyoming.
Nice.
If you own these crypto assets.
Yeah, that was an enjoyable part as well. Always appreciate that.
Right.
And so, what is next for you in terms of kind of what you see on the horizon? That you'd like to address or see fixed?
So if you're asking about the Wyoming in general, I think when we generate, when you come up with this something new, mm-hmm. Without investing more resources into, like, government, without expanding these offices, there's a big problem.
Yeah.
Problem of oversight.
Right.
So it's so easy for bad players to come in and sort of participate in the space.
Sure.
And all you need is one bad press and then
they poison it. Yeah.
So unfortunately, we haven't thought through carefully about, like, who's going to monitor some of these things. So we have a custodian bank, but what's going to happen if things go wrong? The other thing that we need to think about is, like, this blockchain initiative is pretty new. It started, like, with the paper by Satoshi Nakamoto.
Yes.
So he wrote this interesting paper, white paper on Bitcoin, mm-hmm. and in 2008, right around the financial crisis. So it hasn't seen the downturn.
Sure.
And I wonder what's going to happen during the downturn, because right now all of the businesses have a lot of money.
Yeah.
And when they have money, they get to think about these new initiatives.
Right.
But as soon as the liquidity dries up, they need to prioritize
efficiency.
And
yeah.
Since blockchain is not their main business, are the companies going to cut their resources?
Right. And so you need advocacy, advocacy to kind of keep it going and continuity during the more austere times. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Have you received sort of a lot of welcome from, you know, not just the legislators, but with the governor's office and whatnot in Wyoming? Do you meet with those folks pretty regularly?
Yeah, I did get a chance to meet with. So initially, I was involved with this Wyoming Blockchain Coalition. So
excellent.
We put through some of the legislations,
mm-hmm.
and I did work with some of the legislators. And At the Wyoming, in Wyoming, the good thing is like we are the only institution, mm-hmm. so we get access to a lot of these people. And as you said, like Wyoming, the legislators are more unified and they have more open door policies. Like if you want to search anyone's number, it's very easy. You just put their name on the internet and they're very, very much willing to talk to you. Even outsiders. And for insiders, like, because if they need anything to be done, they come to the university. Like, well, can we learn more about this stuff?
Indeed.
Most of the task force meetings, Wyoming task force meetings are held in at the university.
Excellent.
So we get to meet with a lot of these legislators.
Yeah. And a fairly centralized university system in Wyoming, as I remember, because even when we were teaching at the, you know, sort of the junior college level, we were still kind of up under the University of Wyoming umbrella, and so that helped kind of unify some of the efforts in the state, if I remember correctly. You know, if you're out there, and you know, Dr. Jane is definitely talking about the beauty of coming to Wyoming to do business. You know, you've got a great neighbor there at the University of Wyoming. He's got that technology expertise and that financial mindset. Doctor, it's been a tremendous pleasure to have you on with us, and I certainly would want to invite you back to the show already, because there's so many neat ramifications, and it's so neat to get someone who's technically outside of the cybersecurity industry, but clearly you're right in the middle of all of it. And this kind
right.
of, yeah.
One last comment I want to
absolutely.
Make to all those people who are still listening and are thinking about making Wyoming as their next stop is basically, it's not only about the regulations, it's also about the supply of trained labor force,
yeah.
right? So the state is investing a lot of money in the university as well, and we are trying to start these blockchain certification courses.
Great.
So that the businesses who move here would have a consistent supply of labor. And then at the same time, we have the researchers like myself who are researching the space, consistently updating ourselves what's happening around the world.
Well, and that home on the range has the deer, the antelope, and the blockchain certified people ready to roll. So that's great to hear. It's been a pleasure, sir. A pleasure to meet you.
Yes.
Thanks for coming on the show.
Amazing. My pleasure too.
Indeed. My name is Abe Thompson here at the SecureSat Studios in Colorado Springs on the new Cyber Frontier. Good day.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember, please follow and participate as New Cyber Frontier is supporting a grassroots community effort to empower the individual in the digital age. Check it out at privacyforthepeople.org. Also, make sure to join our mailing list so we can keep you informed. If you have an idea, if you have a question you would like to hear answered, or if you just want to get involved in what we're doing, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, because they are the ones that really make this show possible. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.